don't try and do everything at once. Try and do one or two things that you can execute really well and support really well. And then take what you learn from that and apply it to the next channel or the next activity that you want to carry out.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. A huge thank you for the intro to this massively inspiring guest. Just you wait to what you're going to hear. A huge thanks go to Deepak, Emma and Nihar and the rest of the Shopline EMEA team for introducing us to the brilliant Marianne and Barge Capital. I was really looking forward to this interview. Wow, are you going to learn some great stuff in this interview. So thanks to the Shopline EMEA team for facilitating the introduction. I appreciate it, guys. In this episode, we get to catch up with someone who is running 30 plus e-commerce brands from an investment company who specialise in taking established brands that are struggling a bit maybe or which are poised for growth and either turning them around or growing them very fast. And she is sharing what it takes right now to do just that, sharing what she's learning from across all those brands in order to grow an e-commerce business. We're talking fairly big strategic stuff here, but I mean, how often do you get to hear from someone who is actively managing 30 different brands? You don't. So stay tuned because you're going to really love what she's advising us. And make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on her top tips either. And my own little take on this episode. Parcel Post Expo is the industry's global meeting place. This September, it returns to London for the first time in 17 years. For 2026 only, the event is taking place alongside E-commerce Expo, the UK's biggest e-commerce event on the 23rd and 24th of September. At Parcel Post Expo, discover the latest delivery technology, hear industry-leading insights at the Leadership Conference, and explore new ideas across the innovation labs. Whether you're a postal operator, parcel carrier, or part of the wider e-commerce ecosystem, Parcel Post Expo brings the global industry together in one place. Register for your visitor pass today at ecmp.info/parcel post. See you there. And now to introduce our special guest. Marianne Morrison is the investment director at Barge Capital, a fund to turn around and grow a portfolio of e-commerce brands. The portfolio currently includes about 30 e-commerce brands, including 365 Games, In the Style, and Rouv. Hello, Marianne.
Hi, Chloe. How are you today?
I am great. Really excited to get to chat with you because you have such a cool job being able to play, we mean work very hard with all those diverse e-commerce brands. It's so cool. So tell us a little bit about how you ended up in e-commerce and how you ended up in the role you're in.
Sure, no problem. I'll try and keep it as condensed as possible because I could talk about e-com all day. From my perspective, I've always had a passion for retail since I was very young. Always had a passion for shopping, which also helps. And from a consumer perspective, I've got a long career, a very varied career and multi-sector from a commercial perspective. And in 2010, as a result of working predominantly within the oil and gas sector, I wanted to combine both my passions for beauty and business and establish my own premium male skincare line, which launched with Harvey Nichols and Virgin Atlantic, which was quite well publicised at the time. I, you know, went through an investment process, multiple rounds of investment, and then further developed a second skincare brand. Then moved into fashion, and then became acquainted with Barge Capital. In a nutshell, that's a really speedy summary of my career. And throughout those processes, I've been responsible for the P&L, the financial decisions attached to each. I've had to do a lot of the behind the scenes work with platforms and web restructuring because when there wasn't the budget to do so, I had to learn from agencies or consultants. And, you know, I've really learned things the hard way, which I'm really grateful for because I think when you've had to learn something that's got a consequence attached to it, you don't forget it.
Yeah, so true. There's nothing like essentially playing around with your own money, which you kind of are when you're in charge of a business. But you now work across loads of brands, not just in fashion and beauty, but across a whole load of other sectors, small ones, big ones, all kinds of stuff. So cheeky question here to kick us off, Marianne. Across all of those, is there a slam dunk must do success growth thing, whatever it might be, that you are like, we are doing this across everything? Or does it really depend from situation to situation at the moment?
That's a really great question with probably a very complicated and detailed answer for me to answer it accurately. However, the one thing that I would say is both yes and no. Okay, there are core factors of all brands that you have to take into consideration in the e-com space. You know, conversion rate of a website is one example, where when you monitor the conversion rate of a business, it gives you an indication as to how well that website could be performing against industry standards. If you're struggling with conversion rate, the answer to that won't be the same for all businesses, because depending on the product mix, depending on the site structure, depending on so many different factors that can impact conversion rate, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution. And I think it's understanding that, in that all businesses that we have within our portfolio, they all require a different strategy and approach because of the position of the company, the product mix of the company, and all the other metrics that support that behind the scenes. So there are key things that you need to monitor for every business, but your solution to solving them will be different for each one.
So day one, as a business comes into Barge, you're not immediately going, right, we must deploy this on it. You're going, let's get the numbers right so we can see and learn what we need to do next.
It depends on the company. I mean, prior to finalising the acquisition, we will have spent some time reviewing the data behind each of the brands, not just the financial metrics, you know, looking at their website structure, their product structure, their data structure, their analytics, you know, their Google analytics, their email marketing analytics, their social analytics. So we will have a good understanding prior to day one being finalised as to, because for us to finalise that brand, we have to feel that there's somewhere we can take it that's different to where they've been. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. That does.
So we will have a strategy in place for the day one transition, but that day one strategy, depending on what we're applying, some will be more instantaneous than others based on some quick and easy fixes that can be quickly and easily implemented to have a more instantaneous impact, whereas others maybe more technically complex and may require more time to put, may include replatforming, may include changing back-end systems that need the planning depending on the turnover and the structure of each company. So they're all very, very different in that context.
Marianne, you mentioned there about the tech stack, the back-end systems, replatforming. I feel like in the tech world at the moment, we're at a big, not necessarily a turning point, but a big point of opportunity for brands, which is the tech has taken so many leaps forward in the last 2, 3, 4 years that there can be an awful lot to be gained by doing a big tech re-implementation, re-optimization process, which might include changing everything. It might include changing specific things and different integrations. Do you see... And to be honest, if I'm being completely honest, I don't see that so much as an opportunity. I see it as a massive error if you don't do it. So it could hold you back, but it's not necessarily going to catapult you massively ahead of the competition. Is that your take on tech, or do you think there are huge, huge gains to be made over and above what the competition's doing? That was a very convoluted question. I hope you get where I'm coming from.
I do. And I think, in all honesty, Chloe, we could spend all day talking about that from mm-hmm. a tech stack perspective. You know, as a fund, we work very closely with Shopline, as you're aware, and there's a reason for that. The tech space has changed, I think, significantly in the last 10 years. You know, people used to feel that, you know, you were saving money by running an online business, and, you know, it would cost you more to have a bricks and mortar kind of retail outlet. And I have to say that I feel that's an even playing field at the moment. You know, the e-com, all that's required to operate and be successful in the e-com space is as expensive, if not more expensive now, because of the competition growing constantly and the data metrics being, if you're not paying for advertising now, you know, you're restricted on so many platforms. So the tech stack that you have needs to be fit for purpose for the type of business that you are, for your business plan, your growth plan, what you want to achieve. From a cost overhead, you know, the SaaS type platforms do offer a lot more to a smaller, medium-sized company than an older style tech stack. I'm trying not to mention too many names as comparables because we work with multiple tech stacks that, given the nature of our business. I specifically mentioned Shopline because it's quite well publicized that we've migrated some sites recently to Shopline as an example. But we do work with all kind of tech stack companies in that space. And they've all got pros and cons. And I think that really comes back to, I don't think you can afford to stand still as a business. I think you've got to evaluate constantly what your tech stack's delivering versus where you want to get to as a business. And where you find a restriction or you're finding something quite difficult, I think that, from my perspective, that should be constantly under review. Not just from a financial, there's obviously a financial pro and con depending on your tech stack and where you're operating, whether you're operating just in the UK, whether you're operating in multi-channel, whether, you know, there's so many different ways you can, I could answer that question depending on the focus area of a particular business. So I don't know if that's answered your question or I've given you as a convoluted answer as well.
I think it has answered it because I think for me, the lesson isn't you need to redo everything again. The lesson is if you don't have a tech stack optimization strategy at the moment, you are behind. If you don't know what you should be thinking about evolving, where your problems are, where your gaps are, where your opportunities are, and don't have some level of understanding of what's going on in the marketplace, then you're missing out. So I think you gave us a good guide to doing that. So I'm very happy with your answer there, Marianne. But within that answer, you mentioned the advertising space at the moment, which is probably been the most tumultuous place with all the cookie and privacy changes and all the rest of it. Have you found that you are now massively diversifying the paid traffic strategy? And I say paid traffic rather than the advertising strategy for the brands you're working with purposefully. Do you find that is becoming much more of a diverse portfolio than what probably would have been the case 10 years ago, five, 10 years ago, if we'll just spend lots on Facebook and some on Google?
Absolutely. I think diversification is key, to be honest, Chloe. I think the reliance, you shouldn't have any reliance on any one channel. I think when, you know, particularly with some of the changes that, Google's rolled, well, all platforms in all honesty, are rolling out continuously with the changing landscape online, whether it be privacy, whether it be cookies, whether it be G4 analytics, you know, all of these things and the significant impacts that has had on, depending on if you were relying on one advertising, a paid advertising stream. I also think that the way people shop is changing hugely. TikTok Shop's a really great example of that. Everybody is on TikTok, you know, in some way or another, largely. And I think what TikTok have done with TikTok Shop is it's the today version of QVC kind of thing, in that you're always being sold to when you don't even know you're being sold to, and you're naturally engaging and naturally connecting without even being aware of it.
And it's something which I know on some of your brands, you've got very into the TikTok space and the new kind of social commerce, I suppose, space. Is it somewhere that you think would work for all brands, or have you got are there certain brands it doesn't work for in your experience?
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. I think for any brand that's operating online, I think it's really key to understand who you're trying to target and who your customer base is, pending your brand and product type. You know, sometimes your audience can still be a broad audience. You know, you may be targeting, you know, men from 25 to 50, depending on what your product type is, or you may be targeting women from 15 to 25, again, depending on what your product type is. But you really do have to have some understanding of who your customer group is, because if you don't have that, you can't really tailor your advertising in any direction. And without being able to do that, you could really quadruple your spend online. And there's all sorts of different strategies you can deploy in all paid ad platforms, depending on, you know, whether you start with a broad audience, whether you go super targeted, and there's lots of pros and cons to doing both. And I would recommend a different strategy, again, depending on the brand and who you're targeting and what the metrics were, what they tried before, what the data profile looked like within each account. There wouldn't be a one-size-fits-all in that, but I do think diversification is key, and I do think that all brands should be constantly trying to communicate with their customers using different platforms, using different ways and not just through paid. I think paid is one revenue stream that it needs to be prioritized, but I also think that how you engage with your customers in an authentic way is equally important.
That, I think, is the other big shift we've seen in all across, actually. It started off in the advertising space and it's moving into the rest of the e-commerce space, is this need to create higher quality content that actually speaks to your customer, almost right the way from customer service activity through to your email campaigns and the content that you put on the website and the social media and the whole thing. There's like, there's been this big kind of creative uplift across video, graphics, copy and everything. Have you found that's becoming an ever bigger part of the marketing expense for you?
I think it's as important as paid advertising. The one but that I would have would be that don't engage an agency or a company or people to do it without the brand being included, so that it has to be authentic. I think so many brands spend so much money on external support who have expertise in creating videos or creating, who are great photographers or who are great, you know, great within their own niche. But without that brand direction, without that brand ownership, without that brand authenticity, you can really spend a lot of money in the wrong area. And I think we're, as consumers now, because so many people are spending so much time online, I think you can really tell when something's authentic versus when something's well marketed. Does that make sense?
Oh, so much sense, and so true. If it has even the slightest whiff of fakery about it, it's just, yeah, gone, isn't it?
No, I don't even think, sometimes it's not even so much fakery. It's just that it's so polished and it's so perfect and it's so, it almost misses the consumer engagement because it's just so well done. People are really looking for that authenticity and realness that they can engage with. And I don't think that's something you can pull off easily. I think that's actually the hardest part.
Yeah, very true. I started off by asking you what's the key thing you're doing. So we've got to flip that really, haven't we? Maren, anything you're not doing anymore or anything you're avoiding or that's just not worth our time anymore?
It's important to understand when you've got to stop something is what I would say. I think not all strategies work, and that's important because if you've not tried something different and you haven't learned something from it, not everything you set live will be successful. You know, I'm a really big fan of A/B testing, you know, and I love having an opinion sometimes and being proven either right or wrong. I'm much more of a fan of being proven right, of course, but, you know, I equally love being proved wrong because I learn something from it, you know, and what I sometimes when I really, really believe something passionately, I can be really annoying. And the audience may tell something different when it comes to something, you know, whether it's a creative ad, whether it's a, you know, you can't really predict how people are going to respond unless you've tested it. And I also think that when you're testing things, it's important to recognize whether you're testing on a large enough audience. And I think when you're limited by budget, that can be quite restrictive, where you don't have the budget to do enough testing and learning to give you enough data to make a more informed decision. I don't think there's anything we've completely said we're not going to do anymore. I think there's always room for something somewhere. And I'm always a fan of, even if something's a more traditional approach, for the right brand, that can still be very, very effective. So it's more, I'm always data-driven in decisions that I make. And I always want to make sure that it's been tested fully and properly before we rule something out. But if it has been tested fully and suddenly, I think it's important to rule it out and then perhaps review it in another period of time when the business may be in a different position.
I like your answer. I kind of, like everyone else, was wishing she'd go, this, don't bother with this anymore. Brilliant, we now have permission to ignore it. Because it feels like at the moment, it's just that more and more is getting heaped on the plate of the e-commerce manager to do. It's like we're going, you've got to do this, and you've got to do this, and you've got to do this, but nothing has stopped being part of the mix. Do you find that at the moment, that it's just...
I think that's true, Chloe. I think that that's actually probably the hardest thing for any e-com manager or any e-com team, department or agency, if I'm honest, is that depending on your mix of clients, depending on your mix of brands, depending on... And everybody's got super... You know, everybody wants to increase revenue 30%, 40%, 50%. You know, that's the obvious. But you've got to take a step back sometimes and recognise, what are we doing well? what have we got the capacity to do well? Because I also think sometimes you can spread yourself so thin on trying to do everything that you're not doing anything well. So that's one thing actually that I think would be, don't try and do everything at once. Try and do one or two things that you can execute really well and support really well. And then take what you learn from that and apply it to the next channel or the next activity that you want to carry out.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Parcel Post Expo is the industry's global meeting place. This September, it returns to London for the first time in 17 years. For 2026 only, the event is taking place alongside E-commerce Expo, the UK's biggest e-commerce event, on the 23rd and 24th of September. At Parcel Post Expo, discover the latest delivery technology, hear industry-leading insights at the Leadership Conference, and explore new ideas across the innovation labs. Whether you're a postal operator, parcel carrier, or part of the wider e-commerce ecosystem, Parcel Post Expo brings the global industry together in one place. Register for your visitor pass today at ecmp.info/parcelpost. See you there.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because, like Marianne's been giving us already, it gives all of us some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Marianne, are you ready for the top tips?
I am.
Okay, here we go then. The book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I would recommend Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. Phil Knight is the founder of Nike as a brand. And I think anyone building a business, I love Phil's really honest account of the challenges he's experienced in building the Nike brand. And it's refreshing in a way that you're reading something that is a real true story with lots of twists, lots of turns, and he's somebody I really, really respect. I read a lot of business books. I read a lot of books generally. I love reading. And that was kind of one of the books that I picked up in the airport and wasn't a book I'd particularly looked out or tried to find. It was just, I'll read this, and I really recommend it to anyone in business.
Top tip, not one I've read yet, so I must get round to it. I really must get round to it because it's getting recommended quite a lot on the podcast at the moment.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's really, it's a really, really good read.
The traffic top tip, which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I'd have a question to that. And what type of traffic are you trying to drive and why? Traffic for the sake of traffic isn't particularly worthwhile. So I think it's what you would what you're hoping to learn from the traffic. I would probably look to understand more before answering that fully.
I think that's a brilliant answer to that question because, yeah, it's so easy to drive terrible traffic. it's so hard to drive good quality traffic. So, yeah, and it fits with so much of what you've already been telling us, Marianne. Look at the numbers, everybody. The next one then is the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
We use so many different tools. Again, I don't think there would be one tool or system I could call out above the others because some are really, really effective in some businesses and some are really, really effective in other businesses, depending on what we're trying to achieve. I think I'm a little bit old school and that communication between your team is really, really important. Because you can have somebody who's expert in one area, expert in another area, and they're not talking to each other. You know, they're not sharing that information. I think sharing that information, whether it's on a daily stand-up, whether it's on a weekly call, I think the core people as part of your digital marketing results team should all be communicating and sharing ideas together, talking about what worked and what didn't work.
Oh, so true. Especially one of the things we didn't get onto earlier was, you know, this, there is definitely a move towards success coming from breaking down those silos. And something as simple as you were saying about a daily stand-up or a weekly call can make such a big difference. So I love that as a suggestion. The carbon top tip, finally, what's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce business?
The two biggest things from that perspective in an e-com business will be both energy and packaging. You know, packaging is always, always the kind of out with energy of the biggest spend. I think from a packaging perspective, we always try and source everything that's recyclable as much as possible. and out with that, you know, making sure we're efficient in all of our operations from a cost perspective as well as a carbon perspective.
Two brilliant things to do there. Thank you very much, Marianne. Now, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social, please?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. You can find Badge Capital, badgecapital.co.uk is online, and you can reach out to us if you are in a challenging situation, if you're looking for growth funding. We sadly don't support startups or early stage companies, but that's because of our global expertise and supply chain is best suited to those in a growth or turnaround situation. I'm happy to direct you to some early stage or startup funds for anyone that's in that space. And you can find me on LinkedIn also. I'd be happy to give any recommendations I can to anyone looking for support.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Marianne. I'm sure you're going to get a fair few people getting in contact with you in the very near future. But thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It's been great catching up with you and hugely insightful, as it always is. So thank you for being so generous, sharing so much with us. We really appreciate it.
No problem at all. It was lovely to chat to you.
So some super duper advice there from Marianne on what it's taking to turn around and grow e-commerce brands right now. I love the practicality of her answers. No quick, obvious wins. No do this, do that, don't do this. But more that approach you need to be taking to build that success. If you want to get your hands on the notes from this episode, including Marianne's top tips and links to the things we mentioned, head over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, or you can use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the right episode page. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. And if you liked this episode, you can find lots more episodes about D2C brands at ecmp.info/DTC. Simple as that. Thank you so much for tuning in to this and every episode that we put out of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
Parcel Post Expo is the industry's global meeting place. This September, it returns to London for the first time in 17 years. For 2026 only, the event is taking place alongside E-commerce Expo, the UK's biggest e-commerce event, on the 23rd and 24th of September. At Parcel Post Expo, discover the latest delivery technology, hear industry-leading insights at the Leadership Conference, and explore new ideas across the innovation labs. Whether you're a postal operator, parcel carrier, or part of the wider e-commerce ecosystem, Parcel Post Expo brings the global industry together in one place. Register for your visitor pass today at ecmp.info/parcelpost. See you there.